Hi, Jeff Johnston, host of the Living Undeterred podcast. And today we have a special guest. I know this has been about our seventh show, and this is the first one that we're having specifically focused on Gen Z mental wellness, but not from the clinicians, the teachers, the entrepreneurs, but from an actual Gen Zer himself. Ben Trotter is our guest today. Ben is one of our thrivers, we call him, on the Brighton Experience. And we're going to have a super conversation about some of the good things going on right now in the mental wellness space when it comes to young adults, but also the challenging issues coming up and ways that we can provide better resources for young adults so they can have a better experience. That's the ultimate goal. So with that, I'm going to introduce Ben. Ben, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be a good time. I am too. So I've got a list of questions for you. I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but
normally that's my job.
I'm kidding you. No, we're going to have a good time. Ben was asking me about what we're going to talk about. And I said, like we always do, just we're going to have a conversation. The goal of the show is to not be scripted because life is not scripted. You know, mental health, mental wellness doesn't discriminate. It's not linear. So I think the more that you and I can talk about some of these issues, I think the closer we can get to helping people make better choices with their mental health. So, all right, Ben, so you're a young guy. You're still at Iowa, majoring in what I majored in.
Yep, finance.
Finance. We can talk a little bit about that today because that's really from 23 to pretty much like 55. That's all I did, you know. And I always joke when I was talking, doing seminars about investing, I would, I'd say, well, I had a minor in psychology, you know. Never did I really know that my life would flip around. And now I'm like using all my psychology. I didn't technically have a minor. For anybody who wants to go pull my transcripts, I was like one credit short. But I felt I had a good enough background in psychology. And so now I look at that and what we do with mental wellness. And even though, you know, money is an important part of mental health, it causes a lot of stress on people. I think the psychology emphasis that I had in college really plays strong now. So talk about your background, why finance, and then really what got you into absolutely loving helping other people with their mental health.
Yeah. So I grew up, I was born in Denver, grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Denver, Iowa or Denver, Colorado?
Colorado.
Oh, because there is a Denver, Iowa, you know.
Twin to my sister, Bella.
Okay.
She has cerebral palsy. When she was, so I came first, she was after me. And upon delivery, she had a brain injury. And so that is why we ultimately moved back to Cedar Rapids. And why finance? It's a great question. I always was interested in how you can put your money to work for you. And I always wanted to learn to be good with money. And if I ended up not going the finance route, what would be beneficial to me? And so if I graduated from Iowa, didn't do anything with finance, at least I learned how to manage money. And that's where I started. When I was a sophomore in college, I was kind of tired of working jobs that didn't contribute to my future. And so I started reaching out to recent grads from Iowa on LinkedIn, financial advisors specifically, because I wanted to really delve myself in the space.
Right.
And the first person I happened to reach out to, we got coffee in Cedar Rapids, and he happened to really like me. And he connected me to the recruiter, and that's where my first internship started.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so
Were you out there actually selling at that point or kind of more just facilitating the sales process?
I was in the trenches.
Okay.
Selling.
That's what I did right out of the bat.
Yeah, right. So I got my insurance licenses first and I got kind of bored. I was just waiting and waiting and waiting for the summer so I could get in the field and do this work. And I reached out to the same guy who was kind of mentoring me at the time.
Yeah.
I said, what can I do to go above and beyond? And he was like, go for your investment licenses. And so I was a sophomore in college, studying for my SIE.
That's crazy. I didn't get mine till 3 years out of college.
Studying for my SIE Series 6 and simultaneously, so I started studying in April and my internship started in May. So simultaneously studying for my SIE and all those other licenses, I was building my book of business.
Yeah.
And actually learning how to conduct conversations and learn the industry. And I loved it. It was what I loved most is that it was my book of business. Mm-hmm. It was completely my book of business, and I could target whoever I wanted. And there was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of weight on my shoulders, but I kind of leaned into it, and mm-hmm. I knew that I was going to produce growth. And ultimately I stuck there for about a year. My communication skills and my professionalism 10X'd.
Yeah.
100%.
I bet.
And so how you and I got intersected was, I believe, in the fall. It was October, November, and I was looking to start a fundraiser around cold plunging. Do you remember this conversation?
I do remember that now. Yeah.
So I DM'd you.
I remember
on Instagram,
that.
Just
yeah.
Cold DM'd you. And I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. You have a nonprofit. I'd love to learn more. And,
yeah.
And you graciously gave me your time. And so we jumped on the call. And basically the end result of the call was, again, I don't know if you remember, but you were like, I'm not a huge fan of fundraisers.
Yeah.
Like they're one and done things.
Right.
They struggle to generally build momentum.
Right.
You're like, I have a platform. You can tell whatever message you want to tell. I like your intentions.
I think it was the nonprofit side I struggled with. So the fundraising via the nonprofit channel, because I felt constrained with nonprofits.
Got it.
And it's not like I wasn't supportive
right.
of them. It's like I couldn't do what I wanted to do.
Right.
On the entrepreneurial side, it's the wild, wild west.
Yes.
Nonprofits, you have a lot. So when I say fundraising, I still don't enjoy fundraising, but... But it's different now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different type of fundraising. We can really control where we're going to spend mm-hmm. the money and how we spend it versus nonprofits. You're kind of limited.
Yeah, it's so different. So then you're like, I have a platform for you to share whatever message you want to share.
Right.
And if you want to, we'll compensate you.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, great, let's do it. I liked you. You were very compelling. We had an awesome conversation. I still remember a lot of the key touch points from it. And so it took a long time for us to actually like start working together. I think when I actually kind of joined Brighton and the Thriver Council was in January. We talked in October.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of months between there. And Emily and I were talking. She was kind of, well, what do you want out of this? What are your ideas? And I said, Jeff's got the connections. He already did a podcast. Why do we not have a podcast?
Right.
And
what we do now.
Yeah, exactly. And so that got green lit, and basically you were like, well, only if you produce it.
Yeah. Cause what I didn't want to do and why I stopped doing Living Undeterred 3 years ago was I just felt like, you know, I had support,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think there was a consensus buy-in even for me in that it became work. I was like looking for guests, had to send out the Riverside link, had to, and I was doing all the work, and I'm like, well, I would do a podcast if I can literally show up, focus on the conversation, and really not do much more. I mean, I want to find the guests.
Mm-hmm.
And so you stepped up and said, yeah, I'll produce it for you. And then here at Storyline, you know, we've got a great relationship with them now for a couple of years. And it was like the universe kind of saying, we have a more intentional way you can do this time. So even though this is not an infomercial for Brighton, we really wanted to be intentional in focusing on mental wellness. And in this specific show, I wanted to spend time focusing about Gen Z mental wellness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the idea of why we rebranded and we wanted to kind of resurrect the podcast. But going a little deeper into this whole, you know, rabbit hole, I guess, of mental wellness, that you're in the trenches every day. I mean, I'm 59. So, you know, for me to embrace this technology, obviously I have to because I'm the CEO and founder of a tech, behavioral health tech company, but it's like, if I wasn't doing this, I was just back in investments or doing whatever, I would have already been so far lost. But by forcing me to having to learn this stuff, I feel like I know enough to be dangerous. Your generation, this is your new normal. It's like, you don't know what it's like to not have, you know, really, let's say AI, you're on the cusp of that because AI has only been around a couple of years, but maybe cell phones, things like that, internet. TikTok, Instagram, you know, you don't know of a world outside of that. So, you know, as you look at the future of mental wellness and especially digital mental health or, you know, apps and things like that, where do you see the strengths? Like, what do you think are good things about the technology? Then where do you see the problems? the challenges.
It's a very polarizing arena. And it's a juggle between pessimism and optimism.
Right.
I think the optimistic part about it is the information that we're all getting. Like I have the tools. Back then, if I was your age struggling, where do I go?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where there was a lot of stigma, I feel like, because you actually had to take action, go see someone in person and meet and talk. And now I don't have to do that. I have all the information right at my phone.
Right.
I have Safari. And now that's kind of evolutionized into AI. I have AI. I have strategy without having to take substantial action. And I think that is ultimately a pro. I think that's good. But the downside is, where are you consuming this information from? And that's the social media.
Which platforms?
Which platforms, right. And you and I talked about this on Friday, about how the algorithms can just drive you further and further down these rabbit holes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where a lot of people lose touch. And I think that's the main downfall, is the algorithms. If you aren't regulating yourself, if you don't have the self-discipline to recognize, why am I actually using this app? What are my intentions? What am I trying to get out of this? It's not just, and this is a little bit stolen from Dr. Joe Dilley, the author of The Game Is Playing Your Kid. It's not just setting a time limit.
Mm-hmm.
It's, what are your intentions? What are your motives? What is your ultimate goal of utilizing this certain app or playing this game? That's a lot more intentional than just saying, only 3 hours today.
Right.
Yeah.
And this inability to be bored is what your generation, and I think my generation is not too far behind when it comes to addiction to phones. I mean, if I'm out at dinner, we parents like to blame kids, but mom and dad are on the phones as much, if not more.
Firsthand can speak on that 100%. And I think that's another pro. We grew up with it, and I think we're more aware of how to mitigate some of those issues. Whereas
my parents
wouldn't
say that.
It's a drug.
It's brand new.
You had no way of foreseeing it.
Right.
You had that's the issue. And I think you're completely right. I think if we're just looking at social media and technology, I think our generation is more apt to having a better relationship with it than yours.
It's ironic you say that, because I think if you asked my generation, they would say just the opposite.
Yeah.
But then do polls of like your driving skills and ask people, are you a good driver or a bad driver? Everyone's going to say they're a good driver.
Mm-hmm.
Then just go on the road. Mm-hmm. Everyone's not a good driver. So when you have to self-assess and grade yourself on things, you're normally a poor judge of where you really stand. So I think, you know, with phones, like with AI and the wheel and fire, these are things that, you know, they're not going to go away. Mm-hmm. You know, these are transformational discoveries, you know, or inventions, I guess, whatever you want to call them, that you're either going to have to understand how they work or you're going to get left behind. The velocity of growth in technology is, we started the Brighton app in 23. We didn't have any AI when we first started. AI was kind of like in the movies, you know, then it was like a search engine. You type in, you know, Google is kind of like AI. Well, I'm not a definition guy, so maybe that was AI, just a watered down version. But AI to me is like ChatGPT and stuff. That's how my age looks at AI.
Yeah.
I know AI has been around for quite a while, but I guess where I'm going with this is that, you know, you look at when that first came out and then all the skepticism, and it's like, you know, it's going to be a decade or so. And then like within a year, my co-founder and CTO Carson's like, we've got to have this on the app, Jeff. And so, I didn't really know a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he built this behemoth now where we're really embracing AI as an ally in this fight against suffering and pain and trauma, but more not just fight, but also support, empowering, and inspiration, things like that. So I think the struggle is going to be how fast this is going. And like the AI today, we're going to get bored of it quickly. You know, I remember the first time I did a journal entry or something, or I spoke in my phone and you see the typing, you're like, that's pretty cool. But then after a short while, I say, what's the next iteration? I think what we need to do in the space we're in is to find ways to engage people, but not addict them.
Right.
Like there's a philosophical difference there. So it's like, how do you do that in a way that improves human flourishing? Well, one is you can make it gamified.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as you're going through and you're accomplishing your tasks or building routines, you can accumulate points. And mm-hmm. then what do you do with those points, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can cash them in for things to help out. Right. So that's like one way to do it. Obviously, you can put in streaks and things like that. But I think what I was hopeful and encouraging is that your generation, or right now the average person on our apps, a little older than you, looks at this as like walking into a library. And when you walk into a library and you don't really know what you're going to check out, you just start walking around pulling books off the shelves. That's what I used to do. There's a book, there's a book, there's one on aliens, there's one on this, democracy, whatever. I'm kind of thinking maybe Brighton is that way, where it's self-assessing. You get in there, you can do certain things on your own versus, hey, Ben, you have high attention deficit disorder. Here's five ways to put out your fire. And you're like, well, maybe I'm not on fire. Maybe I don't need to be. And no one has to. So that is like the inner struggle I have, is like, how do you build that thing where we can engage them in a very autonomous way? But we also need to show that it works, the efficacy and stuff. So if you were to build an app, you know, what would be the things you would focus on to get engagement for Gen Zers?
It's a very hard question.
Yeah.
If I were to build an app.
Because your attention spans are so low right now. They're under a minute now. It's like 47.5 seconds.
That's what's tough about AI.
Right.
Because that's only going to make things worse.
Right.
Like you get things quicker.
I mean, are things really better just because they're quicker?
No, that's what I always have a saying in my head, that like suffering is kind of linked to difficulty is somewhat linked to suffering, like to value.
Mm-hmm.
It takes what's going to enrich you more, reading a book or scrolling on TikTok?
Yeah.
Even if you're scrolling on important things,
right,
the book is still going to enrich you more, but people don't do it because it's the quick fix on scrolling. And it's the same concept with AI.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to work for the information you're given. And I think that's the trap. But I think I would be almost arrogant to not include AI in the app in some sort of.
You have to.
But I would implement a system similar to what we have with Brighton, which is you absolutely need a reward system.
Yeah.
And I think what we're doing, the way that it's rewarding, is positive.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be a positive reward system that keeps you, that reinforces good behavior.
Right.
And
doesn't punish bad, because there is no really bad behavior on the app. But if someone's struggling and they want to talk about self-harm or talk about dropping out of school, but they don't want mom and dad to really know, but they're not really there yet where they need to go see a therapist. There needs to be a bridge, or just some way to get people to dial back those thoughts. And I think knowing how many people have phones, you know, it was pretty logical to go that route.
Yeah.
You know, we could have, you know, done a curriculum at a school or done a PowerPoint presentation or wrote a book, but even books today, I was thinking the other day, you know, what's the likelihood of a book that we'll read from this point on that didn't have any assistance from AI? Just like when I wrote my book, I sat down with a Google Doc and I took 6 months, and it was 7 days a week, and it was coffee and late nights, and it was printing and editing. And now it's like, if I wrote a book now, and I could have a book done by Friday, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Next Friday. I mean, honestly, if I put in,
right,
come up with chapters, come up with headings, so it's like, I think even the luster of a book now going forward, I'm kind of less interested as I was before, because I don't think they're going to be real books.
I know, the authenticity.
It's kind of scary.
It is very scary. And I've thought of that too, because I mean, writing a book hasn't been completely out of the picture for me, at least down the line. I've no merit to write an entire book on right now, but down the line, that would definitely be something I would do. And I can't imagine a world where I wouldn't leverage.
No, you wouldn't. There isn't one person today, your age,
mm-hmm.
it's going to write a book. And so you're going to write a book in 5 years. There's not one person that's going to do it the old fashioned way.
That's the scary part. I mean, it's
not
like
going to happen.
That, no, it's not. And where does where does all that space go? But what have you always said with the app is like meet people where they're at.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I would do too.
They're on their phones. I mean, that's like, I don't want to say damned if you do, damned if you don't, but you know, in substance abuse and addiction, I'm really big into harm reduction, which is, you know, if somebody's going to do drugs, treat them like they do when they're going to drink. Get them a designated driver. Well, we don't do that with drugs. Drugs get somehow stigmatized. Well, if you're doing drugs, you need to be in a hotel room locked in by yourself and with a needle doing heroin. But if you're going to get hammered at a bar, oh, it's okay. We'll just, we'll promote you getting hammered, but we're going to recommend a friend drives you home. And I'm like, why don't you recommend people to do drugs, do them with their friends with Narcan? Why don't we do that? Why don't we recommend safe syringe needle exchange sites? Why don't we recommend fentanyl test strips? Why don't we take that same logic? You're trying to keep that alcoholic, that addicted person to alcohol that's more destructive than drugs have been in society. Alcohol has caused more problems. Mm-hmm. Why don't we take that approach with drugs? Well, the reality is we don't and we won't, because drugs have a certain stigma with them that society's kind of like. So yeah, going back to your thing, and I got into harm reduction, but I believe that we need to meet people where they're at. That's the idea behind harm reduction. I think there's a lot of reasons why when we did the app, why we selected using a phone and building an app is like, that's where they're at, you know? Yeah.
Totally. I mean, I think as long as you can change the relationship on which they're utilizing a certain thing, it's just similar to what you just mentioned. You can make things a whole lot more healthier. It doesn't matter whether it's your phone or drugs. If you can change someone's relationship to which they're utilizing it, you can change the whole stigma behind it.
And sometimes it isn't just, I mean, I get frustrated with us adults, older people, because we have this incessant belief that we have to fix everything. Like, we don't want our kids to have it worse than we had it. And the reality is that can make it worse, because it can coddle them. Like, I remember growing up with three brothers, and you know, if we had problems, my dad would pretty much say, well, go out in the woods, get some sticks, and go figure it out. In other words, just go beat each other up, or go build a fort, or do something. Well, today you never get to that point, because it's everything's de-escalated so much, and kids can't go outside and play by themselves because mom and dad are worried about them getting abducted. Or it's like, I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying it's different. And I think today, with social media, with the bullying, with the gaslighting, the imposter syndrome, and the inability, the loneliness kids have, the inability for them to go out and just figure things out on their own, I think we have this generation of less resilient humans coming up.
100%.
And so what we're trying to do is, instead of just throwing gas on the fire, try to think of a way where we can empower your generation to look at these things less as challenges and more as opportunities, like the generation that I grew up in. But not, that doesn't mean we didn't have our challenges. We had a lot of them, but it was simpler times back then. And,
you know, didn't have as much like scapegoats to resort to. And I kind of want to stick on that topic, because I think that's a huge part of where depression, mental illness roots from, is that coddling. And that's where my whole narrative started. Like the cold plunging. I came to you because I wanted to start a fundraiser around cold plunging.
Yeah.
And I think like why I'm so attracted to that is because it never gets easier to get in 40 degree water. When I did it 30 days straight,
jeez,
in my pond in my backyard, cut in 8 inches deep and got in every single day. I got in one time with a fever. I was fevering. I'm going to do this every single day, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
I don't care how much it sucks. And what I started to realize when I'm cold plunging and how those things never get easier, it's similar to the idea of like money. As you gain more money, you gain more problems, right? We've all heard that, but you gain more resources to attack those problems.
You're able to overcome those in theory. Yeah.
And it's a similar idea with your mental wellness. As you continue to chase more discipline, more hard things, more suffering, that doesn't necessarily mean that things will get easier.
Right.
You just have more of a mental structure on how to approach them. You have more of a grip on yourself, that because you know that it's good for you.
Well, no one wants to put the work in either. I mean,
no,
you know, maintaining good mental health is just that. It's maintaining, not preventing things. And so I think if you look at maybe all generations, a lack of discipline, everyone has motivation. Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't want to be motivated to mm-hmm. make more money or lose weight or be in better shape or have a healthier relationship? We all want to do that. It's mm-hmm. the discipline. So motivation will like open that door. It's like,
right.
It's like purpose,
right.
Motivation is like purpose or passion. Those are great words, but they're not going to really do anything for you. So it's like, how do you take someone who's unmotivated without purpose, get them to have motivation and purpose, and then go a step further and get them to develop discipline, habits, take behaviors, make them habits so they become, or make them routines and they become habits. It's like, that's the million or the billion or the trillion dollar question to save humanity.
It goes back to kind of what we talked about earlier with reward systems.
Yeah.
Like, what are you being rewarded on? And I think a lot of it's rooted in psychology, like James Clear, Atomic Habits.
Oh yeah.
Great I mean, book. That's a phenomenal book. And I think like the visualization, getting to see the progress you're making and what it's amounting to is so important. I think also though, in the same conversation, delayed gratification is something that's so mm-hmm. important too. If you're able to keep working without any guarantee of ROI on what you're doing, I think also that is something that's missing today, at least in the way that I grew up. I mean, that's not something that you can, that's not necessarily a muscle that you ever really get to train.
Well, it's hard to have delayed gratification when you're on TikTok and all you see exactly. is other people doing well.
When you get the gratification.
Or you all you see is other people doing well. Right. And you start now going, wait a minute, this person's doing great in their business, or this person's doing great at their job, or this person's has a great marriage, or they have great kids. And you start looking at your own life, and now you start telling yourself a story like, I should be better than. And so I just think we're in a really difficult situation right now in human history, in that as we keep adding all these things that make our life easier,
stimulants,
I am struggling in whether it's making us more peace, more joy. And don't give me happiness. I hate that word. Happiness is cocaine can make you happy.
Right.
Okay. Heroin can make you happy. I'm like, I'm talking about things that add peace and joy in your life, and solace and stability and love.
Purpose.
There's no pill. There's no gym routine. There's no book you're going to read. Those will give you motivation, maybe some mm-hmm. inspiration, but mm-hmm. That's the question that I seek on my spiritual journey. Honestly, that's where this transcends Brighton. This is bigger than Brighton. This is more of like why, and this is where I go back to like prescription drugs and like SSRIs and the DSM, which we just keep adding more like things to why we're all messed up. You know, it can't just be this, you have to be this and this. And I get frustrated actually with watching where the mental health space is heading, because I'm losing confidence that by adding more, we're making people better. And so on Brighton, we didn't really want to add more. We just wanted to add different tools that mm-hmm. you can use in your arsenal when you're mm-hmm. struggling. But mm-hmm. to know that, again, there's no summit to reach. There's no end game. There's no victory lap. There's constant work, daily inputs, small victories. You know, one thing on the app that we do, and I keep talking about the app, but I don't want to do that anymore. But one thing I like to do is write down daily victories. Like I did, I'm going to do 3 podcasts today. I just noticed I'm going to be in the same shirt. So, but it's like, those are 3 great victories today.
Yeah.
And so I get off this podcast, I look on my phone. I could have a bad email. It could be a lot of reasons. It could be a bad email. It could be somebody I thought was going to work with us that decided to go with someone else. Mm-hmm. It could be anything. But if I can end the day with 10 victories and 5 losses, that gets you in the Hall of Fame in most sports. You're batting 500.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's a tough conversation around like how do you measure your wins and how do you find the fulfillment in your days. I think gratitude is an important aspect to that. I think what's always been two things that I've implemented to retain optimism and hope just to move on to the next day,
right,
are one, non-negotiables. I have non-negotiables that I will do absolutely every single
That's
day,
good.
No matter what.
Yeah.
And it's reading, journaling, praying, and lifting. That's it. As long as I do like those key things, I know I can have.
Those are four wins.
And the best part about them is none of them are stimulants. None of them numb my mind.
And you can control it all.
None of them give me that quick fix
of
dopamine. It takes mental fortitude to do each of those things.
Yeah.
And I think that's non-negotiables are super important to me. Don't go to bed in the red.
Yeah.
That's something that I learned from David Goggins, who I know it's kind of, everyone has their own opinion of David Goggins, but I love that. It's like, if you've had a crap day, don't go to bed like that.
Yeah.
Make sure that you, and I think you recently just had a post like this
where
you woke up and realized that you went to bed in the red and you're like, I got to turn that off.
Yeah. And actually it was from the journal entries, because I was timestamping all the journal entries and I was realizing that my mindset, I was waking up like predisposed to first thoughts that came up, you know, my cat's laying next to me and I'm kind of groggy, and you reach over, you know, whatever, or maybe you grab your phone, maybe you grab a glass of water, and then you kind of start telling yourself a story. We all do this. And I was noticing that what I was doing, and I don't do this as much, but I need to now. When I first got up, I would get my phone and I would go into a journal entry coming out of a dream or what I thought about the day ahead of me. And I did that authentically. Like, I wasn't doing it just to put an, happy face every morning, you know?
Right.
And I don't shy back from the fact that, you know, I struggle with my mental health, because that's why I do what I do. I'm very authentic with what we've been through in our family and my personal challenges. But I noticed a pattern that my time, when I looked at my timestamps, is like 7 out of 10 journal entries were either neutral or negative, like right in the morning, like 4:35, 5:30 in the morning. And I'm like, okay, I'll try to wake up happier. It sounds like stupid, just wake up smiling. I hate when someone says, wake up and tell yourself you love yourself.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. It's like, okay, I'll say that. And then 10 seconds later, I'm back in. It's like, it's very ancillary. And, right. So I started putting sticky notes, and Goggins, I've done a few of his, cause I do like him. I can't get into his too much of it, but I do like his just really straight matter of fact. He's very pragmatic.
Uh-huh.
And I think we all need to live kind of like that my way or the highway type mindset. It's like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do what I'm going to do the best that I can do it. And everyone else can just leave me alone. And that's his mindset. It's like, you know, I don't really care if you don't like what I do, because I'm going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and in a way, our mental health is too controlled by other people and other things. And it's like, almost you need that David Goggins mindset. Instead of, his is so fitness related, but more about just waking up, starting your day off. And so what I was doing, Ben, is I put sticky notes on my mirror in my bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I know on the app we have places you can put your things, but I thought, well, what's the first thing you do when you go to in the morning? And we all do, every human. You brush your teeth, go to the bathroom, you know, wash your face, whatever you do. But the bathroom is the first place you go in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I do. The first thing I do is look in the mirror every morning. And if I have a sticky note right there. So right now I have 5 sticky notes on my mirror in my bedroom. So what it did is it made me at night focus on writing down some things that were positive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the morning I got up and it would trigger me. So does it work? I don't know if it worked 1 day out of 7. That's better than none. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we're looking at this stuff as hitting grand slams and home runs all the time. It's like, no, I think the secret to this whole mental wellness experience that we're all having is small wins. It's the walks. It's hit by pitches. It's the singles that wins World Series. It's not what you think it is. I love David Goggins, but that's not, his life isn't going to make your life better.
Right.
Because he's so extreme. You can take the outliers. You got to throw kind of them out, because not everybody's going to be able to do what he did.
Right.
But you take the other people, there's a lot of other people that I follow that are kind of more mainstream, I would say. I think it's important who you follow and your routine 30 minutes before bed and 30 minutes when you get up.
100%.
It's 90% of your day or your waking hours is how you can wake up. So if you are struggling in your morning, figure out why. If it's thoughts, then put a sticky note on your damn phone of something that motivates you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or like me, get in the habit of when you first wake up, open up whatever app you're using, make your journal entry, be honest. You know, I'm nervous about being on a podcast, or I'm nervous about renewing a contract from a business associate, or I'm nervous about a court date for my divorce coming up or something. I'm just making up shit.
Right.
First time I swore on my podcast, too, by the way.
I was going to ask if we
could. Damn it. No. That's twice. No, I'm kind of rambling, but I think it's really, 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 really important that you have small victories and you have reminders. You know, if you need that little bit of nugget of inspiration, I'm an obsessive reader as well. And I just write. Now, I have like a lot of pages on my little journal here.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really looked at them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So as we get close to wrapping this conversation up, and it's been a real fast, I just really enjoy talking to younger people. Not that I don't enjoy older people, but your just enthusiasm and your discipline and you know, less toxicity, maybe. You're more optimistic. A lot of young people are. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. I'm just more curious, but like you mentioned James Clear, Atomic Habits, but what are some other books that you've read that you think you're people in your age bracket? So how old are you again? 22. Okay. Wow. You're young. What type of books are you currently reading and what would you recommend people to read?
Currently what I'm reading is a lot different from what I'd recommend.
Okay.
I got very lucky from the books that I began reading from the very start. The very start, I was reading How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah.
The Magic of Thinking Big, Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Kind of, I want to say cheesy salesman books, but they're good.
How to Win Friends and Influence People. Sure. But the rest is really like recalibrating your mindset.
Yeah.
And I think that was super important to me, someone who's never had a lens into right. what that world looks like and what true transformation looks like.
Right.
And I think by the end of that, I really realized that you can really have what you say. I think what comes out of your mouth comes from your heart. And if you can change your heart and change your spirit into something that's optimistic, something that is forward looking, something that is motivated and disciplined, you can change your actions and your words. I think that.
Yeah. I want to just jump in there real quick. I think right now there's this overselling of manifesting your future. Like the secret came out and all people had to do is pray and they were going to get a new Cadillac. You know, it's like, right. You know, there's the extreme of that. I think manifesting your future, I think to myself, you know, your future is going to happen, right? You might as well have some optimism, even if it's not going to be optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to be optimistic.
Yeah.
And then again, whether you can manifest good luck or not, I don't know yet the neuroscience behind that, but I certainly think that you can manifest your state of being.
Do you believe in karma?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe, I'll answer it this way. Every morning I take my dog for a walk. I pick up litter. I walk in the ditch. I pick up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do that. I want to do it because I feel like I'm paying back the universe. Now, am I expecting anything in return? No, but I think if all of us put in with no expectation back, I think karma is the natural byproduct. You follow me on that?
Yeah.
I don't expect karma.
I think there's a really good way
to provide the ability for it to happen.
Sure. I think there's a really good way to illustrate that is like, how can you be open to receiving money if you always have a closed hand
right.
over it?
Or love.
You have to be able to give to receive as well. You have to have an open hand. And I think it's the same idea with whatever type of emotions that you're outputting in the same regard.
No, I think that's a great question. And that's a good way to kind of end this. So for anybody out there that, go ahead.
Well, like the books that I'm reading now. Yeah. I mean, I think psychology is a huge interest of mine now that I've kind of surpassed the initial self. I love them. And
have
I'm
you gotten into
reread
Stoicism
them.
Yet?
Yeah. I mean, I've read Meditations.
Good.
Fully once, and I've kind of read through other chapters, reread through them a couple times. And I love them. I think they're really good. But now it's transformed more into really technical business stuff, very niche business stuff, and psychology and economics, behavioral economics, why people make decisions.
A huge part of my investment career was it wasn't about like picking stocks and picking mutual funds and doing all the analytical stuff. It was mm-hmm. it was the psychology behind money, and I really that really attracted me. So what's next for you? Like, what do you non-Brighton stuff just mm-hmm. in your life? Like, what's next for you?
I have no idea.
Good answer.
Not a clue. Yeah. I don't like setting timelines, and I don't really like having my mind set on anything in particular. I like to pray and journal over growth and opportunity and newness. And I think within that, I can't ever expect to have certain things by certain times. I just trust that they'll come whenever they do. So I have no idea, but I mean, I graduate this year in May, and after that, it's the real world, I guess.
Yeah. It's the problem with expectations is you're either going to come short or you're going to exceed them. Mm-hmm. So if you set realistic expectations, set a bar, you have to have some goals. I mean, you can't just start something and not have an objective, but mm-hmm. if you set a really hard goal, like lose 50 pounds, that in and of itself is set up for failure.
Yeah.
So if you said my goal is to by Friday lose 2 pounds, or instead of eating fried food 5 days this week, I'm gonna eat it 3 days. Instead of 4 sodas, I'm gonna have 2 sodas. Those are massive wins, but mm-hmm. we're not wired that way because everything's fast. Everything's fast today, and people mm-hmm. don't like, we talked about discipline and stuff, but it's like, yeah, I think that's going to be the challenge for us going forwards is how do we achieve these realistic goals, mm-hmm. But not set ourselves up for failure before you start. Mental health's the same way. That's why I keep telling everybody I talk to, is it's not linear.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wake up one day and just mm-hmm. get over what I've been through. Mm-hmm. You don't wake up one day and just go like, yeah, you know what, Ben? I won the mental health battle. I'm on the summit. And then I look over and there's all these other mountains.
Right.
You know, twice as high as the one I just climbed. I'm like, well, shit, I'm 59. I got to still keep going. Yeah. My dad's 93, dude. You think I can slow down at 59 and get happy and content? No,
right.
I'll never make it to 93. Right.
Of course. I'd say this is a good encapsulation of how I approach my future normally is whatever I'm doing currently, I make it my mission. Like your mission is my mission with Brighton. Mm-hmm. Like everything that you and Carson echo is what I begin to echo. Mm-hmm. You have to fully buy in. And just trust that the next thing will present itself when it does. Like when I was a financial advisor and I had all my licenses and everything, I had no expectation. I probably ended up net negative because I spent so much money on licenses and everything like
Welcome
that.
Welcome to the real world.
But I made it my mission, right? And I'd like to think that I succeeded. I won multiple trips, ended up in the
Success
top 4%. Success
is subjective, man.
Yeah, and that's true too.
You
I
did
guess
succeed.
Personally, I completed the mission I was on. And you came out of nowhere, Brighton came out of nowhere, and it was rinse and repeat, make your mission mine. And I think I've already seen substantial growth in my development and in my character. And I think that's really all you can do.
Well, that makes me feel good. It really does because
you guys are great.
Well, we're trying our hardest. Steve Jobs talked about, and I tried to remember this the other day and I couldn't remember the word, but he talked about noise and he talked, I'm going to call it the zone. I don't remember what the
signal.
Word is. Signal. Thank you. You're the first one to remember that. He talked about signal and noise. And he was talking about, and if I remember right, Ben, he said he spends 80% of his time in signal mm-hmm. for the next 48 hours. So not like 2 years. And then 20% noise. So 20% noise would be, you know, checking emails, you know, doing things that are distractions.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, I lived building up Apple in 48 hour blocks of time. And I'm thinking to myself as a CEO and founder of a tech startup that's like 2 or 3 years old now, it's easy to us to start looking at end of year and next quarter. And they're like, now I got to look at Brighton in mm-hmm. you know, basically like Friday, between now and Friday, like, how do I spend 80% of my time in the things to get me to Friday? Okay. And if we all did that with our mental health, with our diets, with our exercise, with our financial stuff, and just focus on signal, mm-hmm. even if you did half of what Steve Jobs said and less noise, mm-hmm. and the problem with social media, and it becomes noise. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's holding us back is, you know, doom scrolling and things like that. So, I mean, we could ramble and ramble, but I'll have to get you back on because I want to get some more feedback from you about your experience so far with Brighton.
We'll definitely do it.
Being part of a young startup, you know, some days we're not sure which way we're heading. Maybe that's everybody everywhere. well, if people want to reach out to you, like, where's the easiest way to reach out to you? You're probably on all the TikToks and link. I know you're on LinkedIn heavy, which is great to see young people on LinkedIn. Yeah, but
LinkedIn heavy. I'm not on TikTok, believe it or not.
You're smart. Yeah. I learned just because of the app.
Yeah. I mean, we
have to be.
Yeah. LinkedIn, socials, everything is Ben Trotter. That's everything. So
Instagram,
Ben Trotter.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Enjoyed it. Yeah. Enjoyed it.